And there's your 8 o'clock rooster coffee pour, signing the Outdoor Living Hour of the Rosie on the House radio program. We are in Tucson for this Saturday, as we are every time the Saba Home Show comes around. And as becoming a tradition now for the last couple of years, we've got local horticulturist Tony Serra of the Magic Garden down here at the Convention Center with us to talk about your landscape and gardening. If you have a question, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to get on the line and get your questions about, you know, anything and everything as it relates to planting, maintaining, growing, pruning, clipping. Tony can, if he doesn't know the answer, he makes it up so good you can't tell he's bluffing, and it usually works anyway. But we've also got another special guest with us, Mr. Peter Warren of the U of A Extension Office, who Tucson listeners know that also read the Daily Star. You've got a column in the paper on Sundays?
Yeah, it's usually right on the same page as yours.
I've had people down yesterday when I was in our booth exhibiting asking me, you know, last week you were talking about oranges that aren't fully ripe. I'm like, what? Our article? I'm like, you might have been reading Peter's. Oh, yeah, yeah, I bet it was Peter's article. They're right next to each other. Did you recently do a citrus article?
I did.
Well, so what was in that? If I get asked again, I'll at least know how to answer.
Well, I think, many of the questions we get are usually bad irrigation practices. So that was another example of fruit splitting. And that's one of the most common problems with that is watering that isn't quite regular enough for the tree, and then all of a sudden they get an influx of rain, and they can't handle that much water after it's been sort of dealing with drought for a while.
So all that growth from that spurge makes the fruit grow, but the rind containing the citrus can't keep up and it splits. That's what's happening.
Right. So that's what we do, is encourage people to do regular deep watering in order to condition the plant to accept that. So it'll be less likely to be surprised by a big influx like that.
Now, I've never taken Tucson as a big citrus growing area. Do y'all have a lot of citrus around?
Oh, yes. And all over the place, Tucson, unless you're down by the Tanqueverty Washes, those areas out in Vail is a great citrus growing area, especially up the northwest side of town. Orange Grove Road got its name from literally an orange grove being up there 80 years ago. Was a whole orange grove up there. And like Peter said, water is the key. Good, deep, regular, infrequent watering. I've got a 25-foot lemon tree at my house. Had probably 1,500 lemons on it last year. This year I'm going to have half that because in May my irrigation system had cut out, so it went a whole extra week without water, and I came home and here was half the crop of quarter-sized lemons lying on the ground underneath the tree.
So what do you do with 1,500 lemons?
Try and pick them up as quick as they're falling on the ground so your wife can juice them and freeze them all. You just have one whole freezer full of ice cube trays of lemon juice, and then you
crack it with your
just
teeth.
Crack them when you need them and cut up. You can shave off little pieces like that. You give away as many as you can. You do whatever you can with them.
You really realize how strong that juice is when you do it straight from. We did that last year with some of my grandma's lemons. And, you know, I did all of a mason jar. A quart mason jar is usually what I carry around the house when I've got my water or my tea, just depending on the time of the year. And I'll fill the whole thing with ice and then put the tea in it. And I like an Arnold Palmer lemonade tea mix. I couldn't drink it. I had to take out half the ice cube and put water ice cubes in there because it was just so strong. Like, man, what are they doing in the store concentrates to water that down?
It's
hard to beat the real thing.
It's also the nutrients. They don't keep up with, they get the minimal amount of fertilizer, and you're doing better fertilizing at home, and you're also picking them when they're fully ripe. Citrus isn't something like a peach that's going to continue to ripen once it's been picked off the tree.
And this morning my dashboard said 54 degrees. What better temperature to be outside gardening? Because what is that going to be today's high? Maybe 75 in the Tucson area?
Yeah, did you see what they say, 80?
Yeah, it might get a little bit. I mean, yesterday it was definitely in the 70s, but today it's going to be a little warmer.
Yeah. But, well, so 80, so what?
Yeah.
We've just gone through 120 triple digits for August, and 80's no big deal.
Nobody's complaining.
So what am I going to be doing in the yard today if I want to get something in? You had mentioned you're having a hard time getting something over from California.
Well, it's getting some of the organic veggie starts, mostly the Brasilica families, because of having this comeback of this one bug called a Bagrata bug or Bagrata beetle, and it's got a quick lifespan, and it's hard to control in a greenhouse, especially if you want to stay organic. I believe it was UC Davis, though, said in the nymph stage that azadactrin, which is the main ingredient in neem oil, is one of the best forms of control for it. So if you think you've got it in your garden, you'll usually find it under the brand name of Azamax as the best form of control for it.
And there's also some pyrethroids you could use as well that yes. sort of fit into that same.
And what are we trying to control again?
The Bagrata bug?
Bagrata bug.
Yeah, this is actually originally from Africa, and it's in the United States, it's found in Southern California and into Arizona. I know in Yuma, where they do a lot of vegetable production, it's become a big deal, so they've been monitoring it pretty closely down there.
And what does this thing look like?
It's a little, maybe an eraser-sized beetle?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a type of stink bug, so it's got a sort of a shield shape to it, but it's black with little red markings on it, and not nearly as big as our regular stink bugs, so you don't notice them right away, especially the small ones, as Tony mentioned.
You would notice the damage they're doing to your crop probably before the beetle itself.
Yeah, it's not technically a beetle, but don't worry about that.
Thank you.
But I would say you're right. And usually what happens is we see a head of broccoli that looks like it's been chewed up a bit, and then you poke around and you find a whole family of them inside just chewing on the plant.
Yeah, that's what I want to.
And I didn't mean chewing. I meant sucking, because that's what they do, is they actually suck the plant juice out of the plant, and then it starts to look really sad, and then you realize there's something going on.
And at that point, if I treat it with a neem oil and I get the population knocked out, is that broccoli plant, can I bring it back, or is it already depleted?
Depends upon how much damage was done to it. I mean, one of the best forms of control for those bugs is some good cold weather. That'll help knock their populations
down. Which we're supposed to get this year.
Which we're supposed to get some nice, cool, wet weather, which means that next spring we're going to have a nice explosion of probably powdery mildew once things dry out after all the rains that we've got coming, and you'll see all kinds of aphids and other bugs that we're just going to have perfect weather for this year, because it'll be chilly and wet without any big freezes, so it's going to be perfect for all the insects to come back out.
You're so encouraging. Uplifting.
Well, don't, if you had a look on the bright side, we'll have a great wildflower display, too.
Yes. Yeah, the rains this year that we just had, that's going to be perfect for the wildflowers.
And it's also a good time to plant flowers.
Yes.
What types am I going to be looking for?
Well, like Peter just said, now's a great time to get all your wildflower seeds down from now through Christmas is what I tell everybody, Labor Day to Christmas. Get all those in, your poppies, your primrose, your lupins, your bluebells, the flax. If you want to do those from seed, if you want to do actual flowers now, you can do.
Well, let's talk about from seed first real quick for that spring bright harvest. Or bright explosion of color. Now, do I just broadcast the seeds out and that's it? Or do they need to be covered with some seed cover?
And actually, if you've got like a nice area that's kind of rough and gravelly, you know, that's a good place for the seed to be dispersed, because it's slightly protected from birds and other things, and it won't wash away if we get a rain so much. So that, and knowing that we're going to get a little bit more rain, it's really a good time to do that.
Can I just throw it out and hope for rain and that'll be okay? Or when I apply the seeds, do I need to make sure they go ahead and get wet?
Well, you could, yeah, I mean, considering what we've had lately for weather, you could just hope for rain. But, you know, it is to be safe. You need water to get them established. So that's why we're expecting a good turnout in the new year with our wildflower display.
And then sometime about January, February, you start seeing little shoots, and then the actual color comes about.
Well, it depends on what it is and where you're at in the state. I mean, it can be anywhere from the beginning of February to April, depending upon your elevation. You know, are you out towards Ajo and those areas, looping back up to West Phoenix, or are you like Tucson heading towards Benson and Sierra Vista area?
Arizona highways always seems to have a shot of Picacho.
Yes. It's just the most famous. It's the number one spot. They usually, that seems to be a good band area for between Tucson and Phoenix. It always seems to get some good rain over in that area there, right along that hilltop there. And, that always puts on a great display there.
And Picacho has the mountain itself. Makes such an interesting backdrop to pictures. It's just such a unique rock formation.
Yeah, I love it. I got some great shots up there of some mallow when you're growing sideways out of the side of the mountain.
I don't know if I've just never noticed it before, but it really hit me today. Or not today, but Thursday when I was driving. I guess it's usually because I'm looking at Picacho, because it is a neat... And it's one of the only things to really look at while you're driving in that stretch of I-10. But the number of saguaros in that pass between Picacho, and I don't even know what those mountains are to the east. Is that the 49 Hills? Anybody know? Nobody knows. But there's that mountain that's on the other side that makes that pass. That's got to be one of the heaviest populations of saguaro per square mile in the entire state. Anybody know?
It seems like it when you're driving through there, and I think it's mostly because, like you said, the east side of I-10, when the storms come through, they hit that nameless mountain there, whatever it is, and that's where it always seems to just uplift and dump all the rain there, and so that's an ideal spot for the saguaros.
The Cave Creek Complex fire knocked out a ton of them, but this area doesn't look like it has enough shrub oaks that if something ever caught fire, that it could take over or ever spread. It's an area I'm going to have to get out and actually hike those mountains on the east side and find out what they are, because it was something I never really noticed before. We've got Jeff on the line that we'll take right after this break. And if you want to jump on, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.